The Gambling Files podcast presents Desert Island Discs with your host, John Bruford. Hello and welcome to Desert Island Discs, the podcast that is not a misspelling. It's a legal requirement. We haven't been threatened with any legal action yet, and I think that's because we specify that our guests, thought leaders, CEOs, and generally nice people from within the industry, are stranded on a tropical island, which is key. As mentioned, people stranded, tropical island, they get to choose stuff to keep them sane. They get to choose three albums, three books, three movies, one song, not on the albums, one pet from any point in their lives, one object, one dessert, hence the podcast name, and two pieces of advice, one from their younger self to their older self, one from their older self to their younger self, and they can choose when that advice is received. Now that we've explained what's going on, we are joined by guest Vicky Reed, CEO of Better Change. Vicky, welcome. Hello.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on your desert island.
Yeah, don't get that wrong.
I nearly messed up straight away.
If we get fucking sued, I'll be banging on your door. I'll be going, fucking, you fucked us.
I'll try not to again.
It's good. I'd appreciate that. But no, welcome. For anybody that might not know, what does Better Change do?
We are a consultancy that essentially helps organizations to be commercially viable, but also regulatory robust, and put like positive play at the heart of what they're doing. So not a safer gambling company that focuses on restriction, but about like, how do you use the concept of positive play to get the most out of your players and your business, essentially.
I'm a little bit disappointed there, because you never know, some listeners might be playing buzzword bingo and that didn't tick nearly as many boxes as I was hoping for.
Well, I'm trying not to, because we're trying not to be a tick box company. So we're about ripping up the rule book and doing things differently. So I don't want to be a buzzword bingo winner.
But we're recording this. So this is going to be going out in a couple of months' time. But we're recording this for our audience's knowledge in the week after ICE, and so I've got buzzword bingo playing very, very loudly in my head, thanks to all of the magnificent press releases that I'm seeing, in which you could probably just copy and paste different company names, and I'm in the wrong business. But anyway, Vicky, thank you very much for joining us. The pleasure is definitely all mine, as we'll prove as the recording goes on. So we're going to kick off. We're going to start with, I've got the list taped to my monitor over here, just so that I don't forget anything, because you know what it's like. Uh-huh. I'm old and my brain doesn't work as well as it should.
I've got to remember my answers. So that's even worse. And they're mine. So
it's true, actually. But one thing I really like about this podcast is that people really think about their answers. And I think that's hilarious, because like I could just make my shit up. If I was sitting down doing this, I would probably sit down and just do it at what's in my head at that specific moment, because I think that would be hilarious. I'd be the only person that would find it hilarious, but you've got to amuse yourself in this life, I think. But I do worry that sometimes people might think, oh, I can't say that, it's going to sound stupid.
I've just given you my honest opinion, and I'd like to say I've spent a long time thinking about this. This is just the honest truth. So you can judge me as much as you want afterwards.
It's the only way. Yeah. It is the only way. Because I think if people are making it up, you know, if you're picking like, I mean, somebody is definitely going to pick like The Art of War at some point, et cetera. And they might really be choosing it. Yeah, I'm not suggesting for one second that nobody could possibly like that, but you know, somebody's going to choose The Prophet, you know.
Yeah, mine are nowhere near that deep. Don't get your hopes up.
No, but the key to it isn't the book that's being chosen. It's why that person chose it. Yeah, that's the heart of it, really.
Don't be expecting anything deep. I'm as shallow as a puddle.
No, honestly, mine would all be John Hughes films and 80s bands that nobody heard of, even in the 80s.
Okay. You're setting up high.
Let's begin with, do you want to start with albums, books or movies?
Albums, I think.
Bring it on. What's your first?
That was actually probably the easiest of all of them, because anybody that does know me knows that music was very heavily in my background. My first business was a record label. So I don't expect anything like fundamental, but...
How do you just drop that in a conversation like that? Yeah, my first business was a record label.
It was a long time ago. Let's put it that way. But yeah, I love music. Can't play anything. Can't play an instrument to save my life. Unfortunately, my singing voice is not even good enough for the shower. It doesn't stop me. But yeah, I do love music. But interestingly, the first album that is on my list is, you know, linked to your desert island, because there most of the music I listen to is from the White Island of Ibiza. And so it had to be Pete Tong and the classical, or Pete Tong and the Heritage Orchestra Ibiza Classics, because I am dance music is just my favorite, and Pete Tong is just a legend, and that gives away my age as well. But you can put that album on, whether if you're sad, it's going to make you happy. If you're annoyed, you can dance out some frustration. You can sing along to it, and you just can't help but smile. And I have been known to fall asleep to it as well. So literally that album was my go-to for any scenario.
Interesting. When you were saying, like, oh, you know, the name Desert Island Discs and all that, I thought it's going to be something by Blancmange.
No. No.
Sorry. Imagine my disappointment.
Yeah, sorry. I told you, I'll just be a big disappointment all the way through. I'm not pretending to be anything other than.
You just have to be authentic.
Well, there you go. That is, if you come to my house or you're in my car, you're basically listening to Ibiza Classics.
Okay, that's interesting. And you're right. It is people of a certain age.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, stick to what you know. I do realise that my son is not going to think I'm cool, and he's going to think the same of that as I thought when my parents tried to play me their music from like the 50s and whatever. Although, having said that, my mum actually had better taste in music than I did. She would definitely have been the one with, you know, the Ibiza Classics going.
Interestingly, I was thinking about this the other day, because I was thinking, like, I listen to some really odd shit. And I was thinking, like, when I die, my kids are never going to hear this music again. It's never going to pop up on an advert or in a movie. They're just literally never going to hear this music again. So I'm going to have to really shove it down their throats and just like leave post-it notes lying around, alarms with my favorite songs on, that kind of thing, just so that, you know, so the music can live on.
Why not?
But I once posited on the podcast that I've got all sorts of bizarre playlists, and some of them are shit. I've got to be honest with you, but they serve a really specific purpose. And you just think, like, I'll be driving along and I'll be listening to like Wendy and Lisa or something like that, right? I can't think of anybody particularly remembers Wendy and Lisa, but I guarantee you that if I were to be in an accident and like trapped in the wreckage of my car, waiting for the emergency services, as the blood leaks out of me, somebody will come along, they'll hold my hand and they'll say, "Are you okay?" And fucking Bon Jovi will be playing. And I'll be lying there and my last words will be, "I was listening to something really cool before."
I like the thought. There we go.
I guarantee it. It will be Bon Jovi.
There's nothing wrong with Bon Jovi. He serves a purpose.
Well,
you're not going to like my second one, because that my second album is Thriller by Michael Jackson. And that's got to be in there, because I realise it's a complete cop-out of one and what most people are going to say. But he was the king of pop. And you can't not help but sing along to Michael Jackson songs, and everybody knows them. And also the Thriller album, and particularly Thriller itself, was probably one of my first albums that I got. And I remember very distinctly my uncle playing me the video to it. And I was about five and I was absolutely terrified. And so then I tried to be the cool kid to show all my friends, like, you know, oh, look at these zombies. So Thriller had quite an impact on my life growing up.
That's amazing. Like, so I'm not a Michael Jackson fan per se, but I learned to appreciate him because of one thing, right? Did you see the documentary about the making of We Are the World?
I didn't, no.
Right. It's on Netflix. Okay. And it's really good because they had like Quincy Jackson and people like that one. And Jackson produced and co-wrote it with Michael Jackson. And he talks about Michael Jackson's songwriting process. And I did not know this. And this really actually made me appreciate his music a lot more. He said Michael Jackson could not write or read music at all. Mm. And what he would do is make the noises he wanted. And then when he wanted to do the next part, he'd play that on a cassette player over here, make the next set and layer it like that. So he would make this composite of what he had in mind.
Wow. I didn't know that.
It's amazing.
Yeah. That's
it's
really
like, cool. Yeah, there's, it's almost like, you know, Brian Wilson recording Pet Sounds and the way that he put that together and changed recording forever. It's kind of that level of like, there's a singular vision in there.
Yeah.
And he managed to get that out.
That's interesting because it's not an album, but I did media and cultural studies for a whole host of reasons because I was going into music, but I had to have a proper degree. So I say that proper degree with media studies in it. I thought you were going to jump on that and tell me that's not a proper degree, but I would have done things differently now. But we did a whole section on Andrew Sachs and how he did like stories for radio with no words. It was all sound effects. And it was just about that layering of how you could tell a story with nothing that. And I remember my one, which I managed to get a first for, and I still don't know how, but I did a piece about a guy escaping from prison and being on the run of the police trying to find him. And in the end, he died in a car crash just because it was easy to get lots of sound effects for that. But yeah, it just reminds me that, like, you know, making stories from sounds that shouldn't normally be on their own, building together to come together to make something big.
Yeah. I would never mock anybody's degree because I haven't got one.
Well, I probably shouldn't have one. I didn't want to go to university, but my parents said I had to. And that seemed like the most aligned and the most fun one to do. And it was fun. But I'd probably do something different if I was going now. But most people probably would.
No, I think fine. I always say to my kids, you know, you're going to be told by your teachers, oh, these are really important decisions. They're not really important decisions. Do the stuff that you enjoy doing. It's fine.
Yeah. No, totally.
Figure it out as you go along.
My last one is about what I love doing, because the other thing, which anyone that knows me knows, that alongside music, my other big passion is theatre. And I realise you're going to hate this too. But it's, there's about 20 different albums that I could have gone for. But I've gone for The Greatest Showman. Again, just because that is probably the one at the moment that if I put that on in my car, I am belting out every single one of those songs.
Now, I've heard all sorts of people making all sorts of choices on this, and really interesting choices for interesting and really personal reasons. And I've never at any time said, dear God, I hate that.
But you're going to now?
I am, actually. I really hate The Greatest Showman.
I think it is
the very worst example of by the numbers filmmaking I've seen in recent years. And that is saying something.
No, fair enough. Like,
I love Hugh Jackman. I love the basis of the story. I love the story's origins. The whole P.T. Barnum story is incredible. And they somehow made this soulless, lifeless, box ticking. There.
But the music. The music's amazing.
There's a lot of amazing music in the world.
Well, that's true.
But the music is part of the box ticking, unfortunately.
Well, no, that's fair enough. But like this, the second choice that I was going to go for, if it wasn't that one, would have been the Little Shop of Horrors soundtrack.
Oh, you can totally have that.
Yeah, there you go. So it was between the two of them. But that is what I'm listening to. Again, in the car, it's either Ibiza classics or it's musicals. So, yeah.
When I was little, just a kid, my mama noticed the things that I did. Yeah.
So you didn't become a dentist.
No, I really didn't. But so... back to Thriller, right? I've listened to this amazing podcast, and it was this dude who was at university and he got the chance to do a bit of work on a music video, and it turned into months and months of work, and it started his career in special effects, and it was the Thriller video. And the first episode of his podcast is his daughter interviewing him. I can't remember the guy's name, bizarrely. It's his daughter interviewing him, and he just talks about the whole experience of working with these guys, and working with Rick Baker did the effects on that, who, of course, famously did American Werewolf in London. John Landis directed it, who directed American Werewolf in London. And did you know this? It was the biggest selling videotape of any kind in the UK.
I did ever. Know that. And I did know about the American Werewolf in London. So because another little interesting fact, or maybe not that interesting, but my uncle was in American Werewolf in London and was the inspector that got his head bitten off at the end. And I was also there to see that being filmed. So yeah, my childhood was full of traumatic stuff. But yeah, Don McKillop, that is my uncle. And yeah, so we had his prosthetic head in his house for years. So yeah. I realise that I find that that's interesting, that I've just blown your mind. That's the most interesting fact that I've ever told you about myself.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Like, yeah, and Jenny Agata, she was literally like trying to shield me from that scene, because she was like, yeah, this is probably going to be not appropriate for a like young child to see. But yeah.
Oh, you see the head roll and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for years I wouldn't go on the tube, despite living in London. I was convinced I couldn't understand that it was a film. And so every time I went down into the tube, I thought there was going to be a werewolf there, until I was probably about 6 or 7. So
yeah, the tube sequence is beautifully done. It's absolutely magnificent.
Yeah.
So a friend of mine had his, so like my peers, we've all turned 50 in the last 2 years. And one of my friends, he had this little shindig at a village hall, and they showed American Wealth in the afternoon as you know, part of his birthday celebration. And it was really fascinating, because at least a third of the people there were teenagers.
Wow. Okay.
And they were glued.
Amazing.
But also what I found was, I hadn't seen it for quite a while. I mean, I'm a big fan, but I saw it a lot when I was in my teens or whatever. Seeing it as an adult, it knocked me for six. Like, the love story at the heart of it is, it's a gorgeous film.
I have about 6 copies of it, which is ridiculous. But yeah, I haven't watched it for years, so I probably should.
Was your uncle ever in Doctor Who?
I don't think so.
Okay, I'm gonna ask my mate Toby. He'll just go, oh yes, he was in this episode and that episode.
Yeah, I don't like I don't remember. The only thing I know for sure else that he was in Coronation Street for a while, he did a program before my time in the 70s called Rosie, I think it was, and then but he was with the Royal Shakespeare Company, so he tended to do more theatre stuff. But he only did the films and stuff because he realised that was where he was going to actually earn some money. And he didn't earn that much from American Werewolf in London. I don't know the exact amounts, but he wasn't sort of like living the life, shall we say. He was a struggling actor.
Well, an awful lot were. But they would do a movie or an advert or whatever, which would pay for them to do a season in repertory.
That's exactly what he did.
Donald Harley Don McKillop.
That's it.
God, he did some good stuff.
It was too old for me to know most of it.
But he was Bert the Landlord in the Doctor Who fifth and final serial of season 8.
I thought there was something there, but I don't remember. I certainly haven't seen that, so I didn't know about that. And he never talked about that.
But, I mean, it's amazing that a memory from your childhood is watching the filming of... I say this about athletes quite a lot. Every so often there is a generational athlete who changes everything. Michael Jordan is an obvious example. Tiger Woods is the definitive example, probably. What's his face in darts we're seeing at the moment?
Luke Littler.
Yes, thank you. You know, people like that. But American Wealth was a generational horror film. It changed everything. It changed special effect. And it changed the perception of special effect.
Yeah. That's probably to this day why I watch the Kardashians and stuff like that because I was so traumatized by anything that's even remotely scary. So I don't even watch the news if I could help it. So yeah, it was amazing. And it's definitely, I reckon, where I've got my love of theater from, because he really, I did a lot of drama stuff. I'm a qualified drama teacher as well, believe it or not. The arts were definitely what I was going to do when I was younger. And he was very instrumental in saying, do not follow this as a career. But at the same time, he was the one that was always taking me to the theatre and immersing me in that world of showing me sort of like that side of it. So that's
pretty special.
You can blame him for why I like The Greatest Showman.
I am not. I think if he were listening to this, he would be horrified.
He would be horrified. You're right. He would be absolutely horrified. And he'd be telling me to go and, you know, listen to Hamlet or something like that. But, you know, I'm a fluffy girl. What can I say?
Before we started recording, you're like, oh, I'm going to be really boring. Right.
Well,
and I'm like,
I think
don't
I'm
worry
just
about
embarrassing
it.
Myself.
Everybody thinks that, right? But so far, in the first 20 minutes, you have revealed that your first business was a fucking record label.
I thought you knew that.
You're also trained as a drama teacher.
Yeah.
And you saw the key scene being filmed in American Wealth in London. That's not a bad opening 20 minutes. I don't know what you're going to do for your next trick.
Yeah, probably. Again, you just don't think that, you know, it's just your life, isn't it? You don't think of it as being anything interesting. And the record label, I do realize more that I'm older, that I do realize that was pretty cool. So, yeah. And it was a great time.
Did you specialize in dance music, presumably?
No, we did like that. It was Vanessa May. We did. Do you remember the violinist?
Classical.
Classical. We also did a band called Bond, who were like four women who were trying to make classical cool. They had like, you know, they did do dance music, but, or not dance music, they did the classic songs, but in a dance sort of style. They were really cool. We did the Boyzone album, A Different Beat. That, at the time, I thought that was the coolest thing ever. There was quite a few. We did a Celine Dion album. There was a few quite cool ones in there.
So you did okay. You made a little mark on popular culture.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is definitely a conversation for another time, but it sold for 28 million in the early 90s, but I didn't get a penny for it. It's a very long, boring story for another time, but essentially I set the business up with a family member. I was only 14 at the time. And I was it was a family member of mine who was working in music, being absolutely screwed. And I was like, why don't you just set up your own label? Because at 14, everything's easy, right? You've got nothing to lose. And he said, I know everything there is to know about making music, nothing about business. And I was like, I'm starting GCSE business studies. I know everything about business. And so I was like, I'll run the business. You do the music. And we ran it together for about 8 years. And then I basically taught my GCSE teacher into letting me use that as my coursework. And I got my A for my business studies. I was very happy with that. And then I sort of stepped back from the business and then went traveling when I was at uni and got told by loads of people, oh, we've just seen how you funded traveling. And I'm like, yeah, I've had three full-time jobs while studying. And they're like, oh, but Diablo Music just sold to Universal. And I was like, oh, okay. And didn't know anything about it. And to this day, I'm yet to be bought a glass of water. But I didn't do it for the money. I didn't do it for anything other than the fact that it was fun and it was exciting and something cool to be doing. And I got my A in business studies. But that's definitely a lesson that I learned, was to know my worth and to not put myself in that situation again. Although I'd like to say I learned from that. I've done stupid things like that again. But yes, that's my music industry story. But it was great fun for the time that we did it.
It's an amazing story. And it is a podcast by itself.
Yeah, well, yeah. It was
don't be giving me any. It's going to be really boring shit. You've already blown my mind several times, not least by choosing The Greatest Showman. But these are your records, not mine.
Well, you're going to hate my movies even more than. Just warning you.
Anybody that comes on here will probably know, if they've listened to the podcast, they'll probably know that I'm going to hate the movies anyway.
Well, shall I start with my first one then? Because you're going to literally hate it. So we'll just get it out of the way. You can probably
bring
guess
it
what it is.
Do you want to get The Greatest Showman.
No, because that actually isn't one of my favorite movies, but it is Wicked.
Okay.
Has the stop record just happened now?
I honestly, I have no opinion on Wicked. My daughter is a huge fan and I haven't seen it yet.
That's amazing. And Cynthia Erivo is just one of the most talented people, and her speaking voice, I could just listen to her speak forever. She's just amazing.
Yeah, she seems like a really sound person. But also I saw her in Poker Face.
Oh, I've not seen that.
She was in the first episode of the second season, and I really like Poker Face a lot. I love the conceit. I think it's terrific. And she plays quintuplets in the first episode.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It's very good.
She's talented.
She's crazy
just
talented.
And she's just such a nice person, I think, and she's hustled to get where she is. And she seems really appreciative for what, you know, where she is and the opportunities that she's had, and pays it forward. And just her talent, for me, I just think she's got one of the most incredible voices ever. So, yeah, it's nice to see someone, you know, South London girl, doing really well.
But you don't get that kind of skill by accident, you know what I mean? She's worked her ass off, and she's built as well. She's got muscles.
She has indeed, yeah.
So much respect for her.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you haven't laughed me out for that one. The next The next one you're going to hate. I actually don't watch many movies, and I realised that one of the ones that I think that I moan about watching all the time, I've actually grown to love. But we watch The Grinch, the Dr. Seuss version, every single day in our house. And I mean every single day. Not through my choice, but I have a 3.5-year-old son who, for the last 18 months, has been obsessed with The Grinch. And so we listen to it in the car, we watch it on, it's downloaded like any on any device at any time, so he can watch it. And before bed, every single day, we have to watch at least half an hour of it. But I do love it now. And I've realized that Christmas is every day, and it's a really good distraction from tax hikes and levy funding and all of the other crazy stuff that's happening in our industry. So I'll quite happily escape to Whoville for a while every day.
That is as good a reason as any.
There you go.
And another surprising choice. Okay. Film three
might be a little bit more acceptable, but I absolutely love the movie Rush, about like the Niki Lauda and James Hunt rivalry in Formula One. Because, again, anyone that knows me knows I really don't know anything about sport. But I love Formula One and always have done. And Niki Lauda is also still someone I just hugely have amazing had amazing respect for. So, yeah.
I would not have guessed Rush would be a third film based on the first two.
It's different.
There are some fantastic motor racing. I'm not a fan of motor racing at all. But I like the challenge for motorsport movies or anything like that is photography, and what they're doing with computer generation now, really. I mean, if you look at the difference between the first Top Gun and Top Gun Maverick, the difference is that in Top Gun Maverick, you can actually tell what's happening. The first film is like, it's motion sickness on a screen.
Yeah. That's very true, actually.
And Rush, and also Ford versus Ferrari was fantastic as well.
Yeah, like any of those kind of movies and all the history of, you know, all of anything motor related. Definitely petrol heads in this family, for sure. So, and my son, if you ask him what he wants to be when he grows up, he says Lando Norris. So we're all definitely papaya teams here.
Aim high. Interestingly, when you said Rush, my first thought was actually to a very little seen movie from the early-ish 90s about undercover narcotics cops, which is an absolute, it's a grind of a film, but it's based on an amazing book, which I think might have been discredited, but I think the book was supposed to be by an undercover, a policewoman that had been undercover. And it's about cops and the struggle of becoming addicted and having to be authentic in that world. It's grim. Jason Patrick and Jennifer Jason Leigh, if I remember right. Anyway, it's a really good movie.
Impressive knowledge.
But not a happy, cheery film at all.
Yeah, that's why it's not got to my my radar. The Grinch is definitely my level.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. You should see some of my favourites. when people are picking through my Prime account after I'm gone, they'll be like, what the fuck? And I can't wait. I deliberately curated for that.
Wait, it might not be a different reaction for different reasons, but yes.
Okay. Yeah, three films.
There you go. You got what you asked for.
I totally did. What about your books?
Okay, so I'm really boring because I used to read all the time. When I lived in London, I'd read like a book like every other day going to and from
reading
work
on the tube, train. Yeah.
Yeah, living in Jib and with a 3.5-year-old, the opportunities to read are few and far between. So I tend to read more things that I feel like I need to read. But even then, I ended up using Blinkist quite a bit to try and get... I had a list of 73 books that I wanted to read and didn't get a chance to, so used that. And then actually, there's very few books that from that has compelled me to go and actually read the full ones. One bit that's the number one on my list at the moment, which I didn't use Blinkist for because I don't think it'd even be on there, but is one that you know, and it's Full Throttle by Keith O'Loughlin. And I love that one because there's two links for me there. One is obviously I love Formula One. So Eddie Jordan is someone that, again, I hugely admire and respect and love just sort of like the complete unashamed authenticity that he had. And the fact that he was an absolute hustler and, you know, literally was, well, I think the very fact that he's always known for if you're doing something and so, or you want to do something and at least three people don't laugh at you for it, it's not a big enough idea. And I just think that was brilliant of how he was so not meant to be in Formula One, but he did it anyway and did it with style and in unapologetically him. And I know Keith because I had the pleasure of working with him a few years ago and we've kept in touch and I find him to be one of the most inspiring people I've ever met. So this book was like, oh, well, of course I'm going to read that. And it didn't disappoint. And I've definitely found myself in the few months since I read it, literally being like, what would Eddie do here? And it's really shaped the way I think about stuff and what I do and how I do it. And so it's had a huge impact on me. And I don't think I can say that about any book that I've ever read before.
That's a phenomenal review. I mean, so anybody not familiar, we had Keith O'Loughlin on the sort of main podcast on the Gambling Files late 2025. And it was one of my all-time favorite episodes because Keith's just an absolute charmer, you know, born storyteller. And recording the episode, I was buzzing afterwards. I was texting my friends saying, like, I've just recorded an amazing episode. I know you're never going to listen to the podcast, but... and it was absolutely phenomenal. And my lovely girlfriend very kindly surprised me with the book as a gift because I hadn't gotten around to buying it because I'm a bit shit. Because I've got like a pile of 200 books waiting to be read. And I'm not exaggerating. It is a pile of 200 books. It's probably about 230 by now. And so I haven't read it yet, but I am looking forward to it because the podcast was such a pleasure.
Yeah, but it's not a book that tells you how to do so. It's just a way of living. But not in like a self-helpy kind of way. It's so hard to sort of explain it. It's just, it sharpens the way that you think about stuff and cuts the bullshit out of your life. Like, it just makes you really question what you're doing and realize that actually, you know, the more authentic you can be, the better. It just is such a powerful read. So I would definitely bring it to the top of your list.
Okay. It's tricky though, because like there's friends that have written books that I've still got to read as well. Like, do I put Keith above or below? Do you know what I mean?
Above. I can guarantee you won't regret that. Like, it really is an amazing book. And it's accessible. Like, it's an easy one to read as well. Like, it's not one that's going to, you know, it's not philosophical, if you like, you know, and getting you to sort of head scratch.
I can handle philosophy.
That's what I mean. But I'm saying you need to actually dedicate proper time and space to doing that. Whereas this is actually a really accessible book that you don't even have to read it cover to cover. I found myself going back to certain bits and rereading it and looking at sort of like the little tips that they give at the end and stuff like that. So it just becomes a book that you just dip in and out of as much as read it cover to cover.
Okay.
So yeah, there you go.
Well, what are you going to follow that with?
Well, it's another business book again, because that is like pretty much what I read. But Good to Great by Jim Collins. And the reason I read that, I know it's probably quite a cheesy, cliched one, because I'm sure a lot of people would probably say that, but for good reason.
Only one person said it, and I haven't actually finished recording their episode yet. So I can't even tell you who it is.
Okay, fair enough. Well, it's actually a really, like, it's an interesting book because I've read so many business books and, you know, how to improve this, how to do that. And most books, you kind of like 10% of it, you might be like, yeah, I could apply that. And the rest of it, you're like, yeah, that's not really going to work or not for me. Whereas this was one where every single thing from it I've actually used and have implemented. And I just really like the fact that it was an academic who, for the premise of it, if you haven't come across it, is he looked at a number of businesses that had had like steady growth and were doing fine for many, many years. And then suddenly something meteoric seemed to happen and they went from being good companies to great. And it wasn't sort of like from, you know, like a dot-com bubble or something like that. It was something fundamental happened within the company to make them great. And when they've sort of boiled down what that is, you can really see what you need to do in order to build a great company. And I found that really fascinating. And again, it comes down to authenticity. Like, you know, they call it the hedgehog principle, where it's like, find the thing that you are the best in the world at. And if you can't be the best in the world at it, question whether you should be doing it. Not what you want to be the best in the world at, but, you know, like I know I want to be the best in the world at singing. I'm never going to be, so I'm never going to make that a career choice. So stick to the things that you can be the best in the world at, and then it's almost impossible not to have an amazingly successful company.
But what if you're not the best in the world or could not be the best in the world at anything?
I think everyone can be the best in the world at something. But then it's about bringing the people together. And that's part of the book as well, finding the team that may be better than you and can be the best in the world at it. And so look at your collective strengths as a business and figure out what can we be the best at and focus on that, rather than trying to be all things to all people or just pivot and extend yourself to go down a road because everybody else is, or that's the way the market's going. If you can't be brilliant at it, don't bother, because you'll never make a success of it. And it's just a really good way of sense checking stuff.
Okay, well, after saying how inspired I was by Keith, I'm a bit depressed now.
Yeah, sorry. Well, the last one, I'll go with my last one, which isn't a business book, and is actually a friend of mine's book, which is why I read a fiction book, non-reference book. And I was a bit sort of like, I don't like stories as such. I find them like sometimes quite annoying, but this was amazing. And it's called The Hit List by Holly Seddon. And Holly is a phenomenal writer. And the story of The Hit List, without giving anything away, is her partner dies. She looks on his laptop and discovers he'd been accessing the dark web, and she finds her name on a hit list. And so she goes to try and find why her name is on this list. And it's probably one of the most gripping books I've ever had. Like, and I just hope to God it gets made into a movie, because it's brilliant. It's brilliant writing, good escapism, and it's just a really good book. And she deserves all the success from it, because I knew she was a good writer, but it actually did blow me away.
I'm just looking up on my Kindle.
There you go. Yeah, The Hit List.
Keep talking.
Well, that's all I can tell you about it without giving anything. She's done some other good books as well. In fact, actually, the other latest one she did is called 59 Minutes. And that's about, you've got an hour before nuclear war happens. How do you get home, and what do you do if you know there's an hour before a nuclear bomb's about to hit? That was surprisingly gripping as well.
Well, that is the premise of almost the premise of one of my favourite movies. Hang on a second. So by Holly Seddon, you say?
Yeah.
I'm just finding it now. The Hit List, some romantic comedy. Chris Wright. There's a lot of books called The Hit List.
Yeah, I can imagine. Maybe you're better off by searching by her.
Well, now's not the time to tell me that, is it?
No.
Holly Seddon.
That's it.
Okay. So, no, it's this wonderful movie from the sort of mid 80s called Miracle Mile. It's an early 59 minutes. The Hitler, there it is. There it is.
There you go.
It's called Miracle Mile. It's a very, very peculiar film. And it's got, the trailer is glorious. And the trailer had me going, what the fuck is this? It's the most peculiar film. Boy Meets Girl, they hit it off wildly. It's Anthony Edwards, who was Goose in the original Top Gun and famous for ER, and Mayor Winningham, who's probably still best known for St. Elmo's Fire outside the US. Anyway, they meet, they totally fall for each other, like straight away, just like, oh my God. They arrange to meet that night. He's got a few hours to kill. So he's on his front deck having a cigarette, flicks the cigarette down. Bird picks up the cigarette, flies the cigarette into its nest. The cigarette's still lit. Burns through the power lines to his house. He's gone for a nap. His alarm is switched off. He sleeps through the time he's supposed to meet her. He's at this diner waiting for her, and the phone outside the diner, the payphone, starts ringing, and he picks the phone up, and it's somebody phoning. They're saying they're phoning from a military base. It's the wrong number they've got. They're saying, Dad, Dad, go to the mountains, go and hide. They've pressed the button. They've done it.
Oh, wow.
And the rest of the movie is them trying to find each other. So in the middle of Los Angeles, there's no escaping. Is it real? Is it not real? And the panic begins to spread. It's a stunning film.
I will add that to the list.
It's very good. Buy for £2.99. It's a lot of money, Holly Seddon's getting off me.
Well, so, she'll be very grateful.
Well, hopefully it'll be like cashback. Maybe it'll get you that glass of water you wanted to be bought.
Maybe.
I remember many years ago, I went with one of my old school friends. We went into HMV on Oxford Circus to go and see her album on the shelves. And I wasn't in there to buy her album. I was in there to buy Hot Buttered Soul by Isaac Hayes, which I couldn't find. So I walked out with Bach Suites for Cello and Violoncello, the Pablo Casals recording, the EMI Masters one. And Mara's like, let me buy you this. I'm like, it's like cashback for you, isn't it? She's like, yeah, it kind of is. Mara, for the record, is the person that did the music for our podcast that use music. She did the podcast. In fact, she does music for this podcast and for the main podcast.
Amazing.
But anyway, that's totally by the by. Sorry, I totally went off on a tangent. This is about you, not me.
Yours is much more interesting by a long way.
No, not at all. Thank you for that. And sorry about the slight segue while I went to buy it. Now I've got 231 in my to read pile. So that's good. That's going well. So we've got three albums. We've got three films. We've got three books. We might as well finish now. One song that's not on your albums.
Yeah, I kind of cheated with this bit.
The reason that this exists, the example I always use is somebody might want Eye of the Tiger, but nobody in their right mind is going to choose a Survivor album.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Bring it.
Well, because like I said, 90% of what I listen to is Ibiza classics. My number one song, without a shadow of a doubt, is Café Del Mar by Energy 52. But it's not on the Pete Tong Heritage Orchestra Ibiza Classics.
You got lucky there.
I did get lucky there because it was a toss-up because it's on a lot of albums. But that song, for sure, is the soundtrack of my life. To the point, my mum loved it. We played it at her funeral, much to sort of like, actually, the priest was like, oh, yeah, that's great. We never get music like that. But that was the song that was, we played it like if we got a new car and went for like a cruise in the car. Like, that's really cheesy to say that. You know what I mean? Like, you go and like play with it for a bit to see what it does.
That's the christening song.
There you go. That song's on any party that we had, it would be that. And like any time that was played, it would be phoning each other. And it just fits every single scenario. So again, I will fall asleep to that. If I'm having a bad day, I put that on. And yeah, the best version of it, though, is on the BBC, on YouTube. They've got the BBC Ibiza Classics with Pete Tong. And it's at 1 hour and 6 minutes. They do the best version of Café Del Mar. So yeah.
I've got to make a note of that because I can put it into the show notes. Café Del Mar, BBC Philharmonic.
Yeah, it's the Pete Tong and the Heritage Orchestra, Ibiza Classics. And it's just phenomenal. And I just, you can't watch that and not smile and just want to be on your feet dancing. So anything. Like, definitely that is the song that I want at my funeral, without a shadow of a doubt.
I know that this is about Vicky Reed, right? But I've got to tell you the story of Rob the Hat.
Okay.
Rob the Hat. I used to help out traders on Ludlow Market with setting up. So I was basically just there to carry the heavy shit. And Rob always wanted me there at 6 a.m. And I'm like, fucking hell, but nobody's going to be shopping until 8. At least. Anyway, turn up at 6, help him set up. And Rob was like, he was always chatty and friendly. But he could be a little belligerent, I think. I did see that a few times. And, you know, as you're chatting, you sort of find things out. And he was an older guy, and he was often in poor health, and he sold hats. That's how he got the name Rob the Hat. I may have given him that name. As I told Rich the Croc. Rob died quite suddenly, actually. And I didn't go to the funeral because I'd moved out of Ludlow, and I didn't hear about it until much later. But I saw Rich the Croc, and he said, yeah, he said the funeral was really lovely, except, he was estranged from most of his family. And of course it still fell on them to make the basic arrangements, and they picked a song that he liked. But they didn't do the homework on the version of the song that they'd picked. And they chose Hotel California, which, you know, it's a famous, much-loved song. They picked the live version, which is about 9 minutes long.
Yeah.
And it just goes on and on and on. And Rich said, yeah, we're all just standing there like, fucking hell, this song's long.
Yeah, that's a problem with some of the Café Del Mar ones. We had to specify for sure. Start here, end there.
Yeah. I hear you. Anyway, sorry. Good old Rob the Hat. I've still got some hats and gloves that I bought off him.
Good quality then.
I won't go that far. I just don't wear them very often.
Fair enough.
Okay, you get to choose one pet from any point in your life.
It's my current dog, who is called Mweebly. Mweebly. Try and say that after a bit. So the reason he's called Mweebly is it should really be Mueble, which anyone in Spain will know that that means furniture. So my dog is literally called Furniture, but I just changed the way. So basically, when I moved to Spain, I saw this word on a load of buildings and I was like, oh, Mweebly, that's a nice Spanish word. Asked Spanish speakers, what does that mean? And they said, there's no word called Mweebly. And I'm like, yeah, it's written on all the buildings that you drive past. And they said, no, it's Mueble, and it means furniture. And I was like, oh, that's really rubbish. But something in the world should be called Mweebly. And so I called my dog it. And so I changed the spelling. Yeah, I fixed that. And it is a stupid name for a stupid dog, and it fits perfectly for him. And he's just the most amazing companion that you could ever have. So there's no way I'd ever be without him.
What kind of dog is he?
I knew you were going to ask me that. So he's a Maltese. So he's a little white dog. And there is a reason why I have a little white dog as well, because I'm giving away far too much facts about me that's very boring. But I was attacked by a Rottweiler when I was 8, to the point that I spent a year in a wheelchair and 2 years trying to figure out if I could keep my foot, basically. And so I love dogs. But I always said that when I got my own dog, which was always going to happen, it had to be small enough that the worst damage he could do would be cut my fingernails, and Mweebly couldn't even lick me to death. So that's why I have a little white dog called Furniture.
Yeah, but good on you for getting past that, what would be a tremendous psychological obstacle.
Well, do you know why I did? I credit that to, so the dog was called Tank. So it tells you everything, a Rottweiler. So it was a pretty big dog. I was 8. So like, I wasn't much of a match for him. And he was a trained guard dog. But the police, I was the third person it had attacked. So it had to be destroyed, unfortunately, which I didn't want. But the police were determined that I wouldn't be scared of dogs. And they were amazing in the fact that they spent many days with me. I'd go down to the dog handling unit and learn like how dogs behave and be around like, you know, the big Alsatians and stuff. And they were amazing. And so I think that's why, because I got to understand dogs and see that they're not all aggressive and that I actually am fine. But then having said that, you want to see me if I see a Rottweiler anywhere near me, I will run a mile. So yeah,
that's very fair. But that's awesome by the police to do that. That's really lovely. It's really great to hear.
They were really, really amazing. And when I say days, I mean, I probably went once a week for 6-7 months to spend time. And it was like 3 or 4 hours at a time there. So they really were unbelievable.
My desert island dog would be Millie. My sun and moon, as I used to call her. And she was asked, a friend's, my stepdaughter Lorna, her bestie Katie, her mother was part of the she was like the person that allocated provision for students with special educational needs in South Shropshire. And she had been reading about reading dogs in Scottish schools because Scotland has embraced this thing, and it's amazing, it's life-changing. And people are like, reading dog, what's that? She said, I want to try a reading dog in a school in Ludlow. And I thought, if you're all right with it, we could try Millie. And I'm like, fuck yeah. And the TA comes along, and the TA is like, okay, so I'm just going to take her for a walk and all that. I said, let me just explain to you how she communicates, because she's not like other dogs. Like, she'll talk to you with her eyes. She won't do anything else. She might use a bit of body language if you're not listening. But here's what she's telling you. Here's how she's telling it to you. And she comes back and she goes, shit, yeah, see what you mean. Yeah, I know, right? So I never took her into the school. It was all the TA taking her into the school. But they chose the TA really well, because the TA knew that she had a bomb-proof dog who wouldn't react, wouldn't get stressed, would just do what you ask of her. And she taught the kids how to approach dogs. She taught the kids how to read dogs, how to be respectful around dogs, how to watch their body language, you know, licking the lips, signs of agitation or whatever. Not things that you would necessarily have seen in what happened to you, because a trained guard dog is a very different animal.
Yeah.
But I know from parents locally that that there were kids at the school, because they didn't tell any of the parents they were going to do this. They just dropped Millie into the school and got on with it. Some of the parents thought that it must be a fluffy toy. But I know from some of the parents that they had kids who were terrified of dogs, and they now have dogs.
Yeah.
And it's just one little thing changing the world. I was so proud of her.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Ah, it's brilliant. Funny thing is, it was like Superman, right? If she walked down the street with Heather, the TA, people would literally shout, oh my God, it's Millie or whatever. Right? She was like a fucking rock star. Walks down the street with me, not a word, not a sound. Nobody would recognize her.
Oh, that's really cute. But yeah, it's very rarely the dogs. It's always the owners. And, you know, like Tank had been trained to be a guard dog, so that's the way that it was going to act. But the single best piece of advice they gave me, which I've never forgotten, is that a dog that's going to attack you is not a barking dog. If it's barking, it's scared of you and it's telling you to go away. If it's watching you and silent, you're in trouble. And so silent dogs are definitely the ones I'm wary of and run away from.
Yeah, I've told my kids the exact same thing, because Millie was a very dominant dog. And the only dogs that ever tried to fuck her up were ones that attacked in silence.
Yeah.
Ones that saw the dominant dog. Like, I saw one dog, and this dog was massive. It was a sheepdog mix, and it was fucking enormous. But it went past me and another dog I was walking to get to Millie, and none of us heard it. This thing was like 50-plus kilos of dog. None of us heard a sound. Went straight through her, and I'm like, fucking good over it. But it's a big difference. Like you say, a dog barking is a dog that's worried and afraid. A dog that's not is a dog that's just coming to fuck you up.
Mm-hmm.
Sound advice. That is really sound advice. I'm super impressed. I'm super impressed with your experience, and I'm super impressed with how you come out of it. I think that's amazing. Out of all the things that you've said, that's the coolest.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So far.
It's definitely downhill from here. Do you want my dessert then? Because this was the hardest bit for me, because believe it or not, I don't actually really like desserts that much. I'm not a sweet tooth person. But
you can have a savoury dessert.
Well, no, I do have a sweet one that I came up with. I'm also really famous for the fact that I'll go, oh my God, that sounds amazing. I'll order something. And Ian will say to me, we're not ordering dessert because neither of us are going to eat it. And I'm like, yeah, no, I don't want dessert. And then I'll look at the dessert meal. I'm like, oh my God, of course I'm getting that. It sounds amazing. I have one spoon of it. I'm like, yeah, I'm done now. And he can't stand waste. So he's then, well, now I have to eat it. And the one that I will always order without even thinking about it, and will also only ever have one mouthful of, is it's very specific because it's only served in a, that I'm aware of, in a restaurant in Gibraltar called Charlie's. So yeah, anyone from here, the Nutella Oreo cheesecake. It's amazing. And there is no way I'm not ordering that if we go to Charlie's, but I'm literally eating a tiny bit. So I need at least two other people there to help me finish it.
Wow.
Yeah.
What kind of restaurant is Charlie's?
Like a pub type thing. Like it's a...
You can say cocaine. It's named after the main dish.
It's hard to explain Charlie's, as anyone here will know. It's got the biggest menu you'll ever find, and it's part Indian restaurant, part like pub food. And so it's the restaurant that you'll go to if you don't know the people that you're dining with, because there is, if you can't find something you like on Charlie's menu, there's just no point leaving the house.
There's no point in living.
Absolutely. And if you don't order the Nutella Oreo cheesecake, there's no point in going to Charlie's either, because you've just missed out on the best thing ever.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a solid choice. I love it. So we had Walter Bunyan on episode 5, I think it was. And he picked like a unique dessert that's unique to one location. And I love that, actually. I love that there are these places that do these things where, so you can't find anywhere else. That's how you make loyalty. You make a little bit of magic.
Yeah, I mean, addictive. I'm sure a Nutella Oreo cheesecake is probably available in other places. I've just not found it. But in gym,
I don't think it is.
I would literally go to Charlie's just for that.
So. You're lighting up my sugar addiction. Just thinking.
Well, next time you're in Jib, we'll get you some.
I've only been once, you know.
Oh. That probably needs to be rectified then.
I was there for about 8 hours.
Oh, that's a very quick trip.
I'm not going to tell you what I was doing there.
I don't want to know.
Oh, it's nothing. It's nothing filthy. It's nothing grubby. I was there for work. So you got two pieces of advice, one from your younger self to your older self, one from your older self to your younger self. This is where we separate the wheat from the chaff. What are you going to be, Vicky, wheat or chaff?
Definitely chaff, because I'm the last person anyone's going to for any kind of advice.
Your own, right?
No, I know my strengths and my weaknesses. Advice is not one of my strengths. So no, my advice to myself is get advice from people that actually know what they're talking about. That's actually probably
Hang on. Isn't what you do for a living advising businesses?
As a collective, and my team, as I've said, are the geniuses behind that. I'm very, very aware that one person is not a genius, and you need an amazing team and amazing people around you. And so I have definitely hired the best team who are way cleverer and way smarter than I am, and I go to them for advice on a daily basis.
That doesn't mean you're not underselling yourself though, does it?
Do you know what? Like, I can advise you on musicals, and I can advise you on... No, like I can advise on certain things, and there's certain specific things. If someone came to me and asked me for advice, I can hold my own with. But by and large, I'm very aware that if I've got a big decision to make, I am going to find somebody else that I can. Like, I have no issue in saying I don't know what I'm talking about or I don't know what I'm doing. Can I please pick your brain? And I think any kind of success I may or may not have had in the past is absolutely because I've recognized what I can do and what I can't. And that in 90% of scenarios, 99% of scenarios, there will be someone that has got a lot more knowledge and a lot more understanding on something than me. And so the best thing I can do for myself is to go and ask them what I should be doing. And so I do quite frequently.
It's very fair.
Yeah.
My favorite musical, just so you know, is Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Okay. Solid choice.
Largely forgotten, weirdly.
It is, until, was it Amanda Holden did a version of it, which I was horrified about.
Yeah, luckily I didn't see that, but the movie is phenomenal.
I haven't seen the movie.
It's really, really good, and it's a George Roy Hill film, and it is not... he's one of those directors from the era when a director could make any kind of movie because they just make what they were told to make. Mm-hmm. But even with that in mind, it sticks out from the rest of the movies that he made as just an absolutely bizarre choice for him. But it's fantastic. And it's Julie Andrews being Julie Andrews. Mm. Fucking, what's
that
to love?
Can't beat Julie Andrews. Anything with her in it is going to be a winner. So, yeah. I think, like, maybe, if I have to give myself some kind of advice...
Which, bring it. You've got
the older one to me. Well, the older one to me would, I don't know, I guess it would be about investing in yourself early, which I know is, again, a bit of a weird thing to say, but you realize as you get older that the only thing you're never going to get more of is time. And so if you invest in yourself early, whether that's in health, whether it's setting up your finances early, whether it's, you know, anything, like, you know, education, doing the things that you want to do, it's going to pay dividends the further on that you go. And I was definitely put off doing things when I was younger because you think you're invincible or you think there's all this time. And you sort of suddenly, I've got so many friends now that are getting into their mid 40s and they're going like, oh, I haven't thought about a pension, or how am I going to retire? And I actually, a friend of mine who is amazing and is one of the, I would say, most practical people I've ever met, was like, oh, I'm going to have to work till the day I die because I've not thought about a pension. And I'm like, what? Like, it's just, the more you can do the earlier, it'll just pay dividends later. And so that's probably the only advice that I would give to my younger self now.
I can totally relate to your friends there, by the way.
I think a lot of people are in that situation. That terrifies me.
The world has changed a lot in my lifetime, and the way that governments finance things. And let me put it this way. I don't think the phrase pension black hole existed when I was born. But it definitely exists now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, I always remember I was going to visit this business outside Leeds, and this guy picked me up to take me to this place, business that he ran. And we were just chatting in the car, as you do. We're going past Elland Road, actually, as we were talking. And I was asking him, you know, how he'd gotten to where he was running this business. He said, I was expecting to be retired now, but I had everything, you know, in a pension fund and everything was set up. And then the stock market wiped it out down to about less than a third of what I'd put in.
Yeah.
And I just thought, that must have been utterly heartbreaking.
Yep.
And that it's at the vagaries, at the whim of external forces that he can't do a thing about.
Yeah.
So this guy who would have been retired is probably still working now, but thought he was set up. So I totally get on side with what you're saying, and I totally agree, and I'm trying to teach my kids that. But if you start early enough, you can do it in a low-risk way, in which there is zero risk to your, you know, you can invest in government bonds or whatever, something which, okay, might only give you 2% a year, but if it does it every year, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just about diversifying, and the earlier you start, the more options and opportunities you have. And so, yeah, that's definitely it. But I think more importantly, actually, giving my younger self stuff is almost pointless. I think the advice I need now that I have taken from my younger self is what I was saying about with the record label. Now my advice would be just do it. Like, I overthink everything, whereas my younger self didn't give a damn about any consequences and was like, everything was easy, everything was possible. And so if an opportunity came along, I just did it. Whereas now I'll try and find every possible excuse not to do something and I'll talk myself out of it. And I'll be like, oh, that's too difficult now. Well, there's too much to lose or it's too risky. And actually there have been several opportunities that I've passed up because I've been too scared to do them or thought I couldn't do it. Whereas younger Vicky is like, of course I can do that. And so that the advice that I do is like nothing, nobody can tell you can't do anything. Anyone is capable of doing absolutely anything that they want to. It's just that I think most of us put our own sort of, you know, limitations in and stop ourselves from doing it. And yeah, younger me wouldn't have done that. So I'm trying very hard when I do tell myself, oh, you can't do that, or that's beyond you. I'm like, is it though? Is there a way I can make that work? And actually, since I've been thinking that, I have taken the brakes off of quite a few things that I've wanted to do that I would have been too scared to have done probably even a year ago.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Fintan's always wanted me to start writing a book.
There you go. Why haven't
you? Yeah, because Fintan can fuck off. I'm just kidding. Fintan, if you're listening. I've got a bunch of things bubbling away in my head, but it's an odd thing. I don't write in the way that most people do. I write it all up here and then I just sit and it all just comes out of my fingers. But I do that with articles as well. I don't do drafts or anything like that. When I write it, it's done.
Yeah.
And that's not like being arrogant. It just means I've gone over it in my head and I know the path that I want to take and I know the milestones in it. And then I just do that. And it is generally, you know, so obviously it needs an editor looking at it or whatever. But I know people, I know professional writers who will do 10 or 15 drafts of something. Wow. And I just think, if only you'd gotten it right the first time.
Absolutely. Well, there you go.
I think you've got to have some faith in yourself in life. I think it's a very important thing.
Nobody's going to back you if you don't. And so you've got to make things happen. And what's the worst that's going to happen? Someone says no. It's very unlikely that you're going to lose everything by trying something. So, like, you might as well give it a go. And if it doesn't work out, like they say, you only regret the things you didn't do, not the things that you tried. So I'm trying to
phrase it.
Yeah.
The way I phrase it to my kids is nobody's going to have confidence for you.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah. Believe in yourself. You're good.
Yeah.
And my middle child, he was having some trouble with some kids around the corner. He was just like slinging around rude words and things. And I said, in my classic great parenting mode, I said, fuck them, they're assholes. But also, what have you got to remember? And he looked at me looking a bit puzzled. And then he just went, I'm awesome. I'm like, yes, you fucking are.
Yeah.
Now go and tell that kid he's fat.
It's so easy to listen to the negative stuff. I definitely, for sure, would not go and advocate to going and telling someone mean stuff. But, like, no, I absolutely get that for sure. Like, I spent my 20s and probably my 30s listening to the one thing that if anyone said, you can't do it or you're not going to be good enough, I listened to that and took it on board and thought I wasn't going to be good enough. And now the beauty of being in my 40s is I'm like, I don't care. I don't want to get to the point of saying I didn't try that. And so if you think I'm going to make a fool of myself or I'm going to be bad at it, that's fine. I can be. And I don't mind being bad at something and I don't mind failing at something, but I do mind missing the opportunity.
One of those great Henry Ford quotes, might be a Henry Ford quote, might not be.
Go on.
Whether you think you can or think you can't, you're probably right.
Well, there you go. There you go.
Clever bastard.
For sure.
So look, that's it. That's all my questions. Was that painful?
No, slightly uncomfortable and embarrassing, but it was more fun than I thought it would be. So thank you.
No worries. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, if anybody wants to get hold of Better Change.
Yep, that's it.
How do they do it?
www.better-change.org or find me on LinkedIn. Or in Charlie's. I'll buy you an Oreo Nutella cheesecake.
Now you're talking. Thank you.
Thank you.